Hello and welcome to this new episode of Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers podcast. Today we're going to talk about procrastination. We're going to go in depth in what procrastination is and why we're talking about it here. Why can it be the result of having been through maternal narcissism? So let's start with asking a question. I want to ask you a question. Do you find yourself procrastinating? Is that something you do? Do you find yourself avoiding those actions that you know would be good for you or important in order to achieve your dreams, things you want to do in life? Take a moment to just feel into that and see if that's something that happens to you, and be honest with yourself. The invitation is to be honest with yourself, because I know for a long time I thought I didn't, you know, and I said, oh no, that's not something I do, and then I realized I did. So, but even if you don't have an answer straight away, stick with this, because we're gonna go through all the aspects of it in this episode, and that might help you understanding better if you are actually doing it or not, and in what aspects of your life you are doing it. So I know I procrastinated a lot, still fall into that, and for entire portions of my life I avoided what I knew to be good for me. Like, I avoided it like the plague. And so many around me, especially my family and of course my mother, judged me severely for this fact. I felt really bad about myself because of this. And I envied people who seemed to always jump into action, who had an idea 1 minute and were racing to implement it the next. I really judged them and I really envied them. And I, as a result of that, judged myself because I felt like I wasn't able to do that. I was labeled afraid, immature, broken, even depressed. My mother went as far as to suggest I go to therapy various times in my life. And although I never did, well, I did some therapy, but not for that, not directly at least. And although I never took medications, I ended up believing all those labels. I really did. There was once, not a long time ago, actually, just maybe a year and a half ago, during a course for women I attended, the facilitator said, "You always find the time for the things you love." She was, of course, doing her sales pitch. So she was telling us, you know, you need to find time to do this course and blah, blah, blah. And so she threw that sentence in like it was nothing. And I felt that sentence like a punch. I really did. It was like, whoa, this feels really horrible. And I remember thinking in that moment, this is utter bullshit. And there's no other language I can use for it. I'm sorry if this is not polite, but it is bullshit. And I also, it brought me to realize back then, in that moment, how toxic it is to hear that from a person of influence. You know, someone we're looking up to, someone we want to sign up to a course for. So like, someone we think has their shit sorted. And now, no judgment on that poor person. That's okay. I mean, she was doing what she was doing. But in my experience with myself and with many women I work with, the reality is, in fact, the opposite. We never seem to find the time for the things we love or that are beneficial for us. So to hear that you always find the time for the things that you love, that's untrue. And it can make you feel really bad about yourself if you truly believe that that is just what everyone else does. So I don't know what your passions are, without talking to you one-on-one, of course. So I'm going to speak from my own experience here. I love, 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 really love writing fantasy novels. It is one of the ways I express creatively. And yet I can go years avoiding it. I mean, years. You've heard me right. The house is never tidy enough. I'm busy. I'm not feeling well. My kids are around and they need me. I need to cook. And I can keep going with the most creative excuses. Actually, maybe I could write a novel about the creative excuses I use not to write a novel. And I'm being sarcastic, but that is what happens. Something that just sets my soul on fire. Something that I really like doing. And I never seem to find the time to do that. In the same way, there are practices I love doing. I love yoga. I love embodiment. Some breathing practices that they're really good for me. I know that they're good for me. How I feel before and how I feel after, it's proof. Because very often I'm feeling not so good, not so in my body, quite stiff, aches and pains, blah, blah, blah. And when I'm done with these practices, I always feel so good. And I know from having experienced periods where I do them often, like on a daily basis, and periods where I don't, there's a massive difference. And yet, I can go for times where I swear I'm allergic to my sacred space and I avoid it. I don't know, do you ever find that? Is that an experience you're having? Maybe not, obviously, in this particular specific things. These are my own examples, but it's to give you an idea or an example of how this can work. And if you find that you're doing that, how long have you been procrastinating on the things you would love doing? How much second guessing on yourself can you do? Wondering if you're good enough at something, doubting yourself. And how much do you judge yourself for the procrastination that you do? Especially if you believe a statement like the one we said before, you always find the time for the things that you love, to be true for everything for everyone else but you. Okay, so if we hear someone of influence say a statement like that, we automatically assume, well, this must be true for everyone, but it's really not true for me. I am faulty. And let me tell you something, it is so not true, really. It would be in an ideal world, I give you that. But in real life, it is not true. The reality of it is, most people haven't even slowed down enough to know what they would truly love to do. So never mind finding the time to actually doing it. Okay? It's really important. Be kind to yourself. Most people just act on autopilot and sedate most of the time. And again, there's no judgment here. There's no judgment. That is the programming we are subjected to. The training most of us have received since childhood to disconnect and sedate. Okay, disconnect from your identity, from your inner guidance system, and sedate the pain of that disconnection by distracting constantly. Okay, just stay with this for a moment because this is really key. So this is actually true for a lot of people, but let's narrow it down to women that have experienced having a narcissistic mother in their life. The training that we've received since childhood is to disconnect and sedate. So you disconnect from your identity, from your inner guidance system, and sedate the pain of that disconnection by distraction. Okay? I did that for a very long time. In many ways, actually. So before becoming a professional at procrastinating, I was the opposite. I was a super active doer, always moving, always achieving something, always involved in everything. And guess what? Always on burnout or on the verge of it. And the weird thing is, once I stopped that, or had to because I had no batteries left in me, I realized the greatest irony of it all for me. I was procrastinating back then too. I was only better at hiding it from the outside, okay? So people couldn't really see it from the outside because I seemed so active, right? And also from myself, I wasn't aware of this, obviously. But once I slowed down and all the noise I had created around me faded, it all just became more obvious to me. So I was doing a lot, but I was still avoiding myself and what I truly wanted to do. And also, by doing, I was avoiding confronting that pain that I felt had a disconnection inside. So whether you're a super active doer or you are hesitating at every corner, the energy behind it might very well be the same. And I'm not saying it is, but it's worth looking at. It might be. So how? Let's have a look at how this can manifest in your life. Okay, so you can be the type that does many things. So you do many things. You're very connected with plenty of people. Maybe you have a very successful career, but you get to the end of the day and your mind is still racing. You're never fully satisfied. And when you stop, you feel exhausted. And not in the good kind of content way of, like, contented way of, well, I've done a lot, but I'm feeling really good and now, I feel so relaxed. Not that way, okay? You're feeling exhausted, but you're edgy. You're exhausted, but still wanting to go, unable to truly rest. You're like lying on your bed, but you're like inches from the actual mattress all the time. There is like a constant tension, and you mightn't even be aware of that, but it manifests in the way you act around people. You can be snappy, you can be stressed, in the way your body feels, you know, aches and possible headaches. There can be like an underground anxiety always there. Okay, so that's one way. The other way is the opposite. So you can't even get up in the morning. So different, you can be one type of person or the other, okay? And these are the extremes, but there's all the shades in between, of course. So you can't even get up in the morning. Never mind even getting to the point that you do things you would like to. Like, that's not even a possibility. And anytime you get an idea, you also get all the reasons why it won't work or why you would not be able to do it, and or both, so why bother? Okay, it's like more, so one is more of an active way of going about things, one is more passive, but there's still patterns that are not very helpful. And then the third type is fluctuating between the two. Okay, so going from highs of inspirations where you feel super active and you're unstoppable. I mean, you do. And lows where you feel deflated, demotivated in a roller coaster kind of way. And although there is a lot to be said about how we're cyclical being and waves of more active periods and periods where you don't feel so active are very natural, and also especially for this is where this is for everyone, but for women especially, we also have our cycles. So we have that. The cyclical nature is a really important aspect of how we operate, how we function. However, these crazy fluctuations are not healthy either. So it's like there's a whole episode about how that cyclical nature is important and has to be honored. But what I'm talking about here is not that. What I'm talking about here is when it happens in a way that is completely disconnected from those cycles and it's very extreme and it's very uncomfortable. Okay? So, why are we talking about this today? Is all this the result of having a narcissistic mother? I can't say that for sure, as in I can't say that everyone that is experiencing this, it's the result of having had a narcissistic mother. But what I can say is that in my observation, when these patterns show up, it is the result of a lack of safety and emotional support in childhood, a trauma. Okay, which is something we definitely have experienced as daughters of narcissistic mothers. We didn't have safety in childhood and we didn't have emotional support. So dynamics we have been through have had an impact in how we go about things later on as adults. And let's have a closer look at some of these dynamics with having a narcissistic mother that can have an impact on this and have created these patterns that now manifest as avoidance and procrastination. Okay? So, number one, for example, a narcissistic mother uses criticism and put downs, explicit or covert. Okay? And what does that do? That stifles the natural development of confidence in the child. And you can check out the episode 3 Ways a Narcissistic Mother Destroys Your Confidence if you want to go deeper into this aspect, if that just really feels like there's something in this for me, because that's really, really, really key in what we're talking about today as well. So, number two, narcissistic mothers take advantage of any situation where the child feels helpless. They don't empower, okay, but they tend to take over in order to feel important and needed while the child grows up feeling less and less capable, okay? So when a child needs support and help, a narcissistic mother doesn't offer the opportunity for gaining that confidence through action, gaining that feeling, yes, I am capable, and just offering that support that is needed. No, she just comes in and takes over, or tells you're useless and does it herself, and then goes, here, this is how you should have done it. Okay? Which makes you feel less and less capable. Three, narcissistic mothers often use guilt tripping. So when the child has an impulse to do something, maybe something new, something that's not approved of, is not in the list of the approved activities, but it's something the child really would like to do, there's a use of guilt that will discourage the child. Ah, if you did this, how would that make me feel? How, you know, like, have you thought about me? Had you thought about how I would feel if you did that? And something like that. Four, a narcissistic mother never credits the child for simply being. Okay? Her love is conditional. And the child learns to never stop doing. So that can be like, especially if you're identifying more with that first type of person, the active doer, the one that was my first portion of life was doing, 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 doing. It's because we learn that when we do, 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 that's the way we get love. And so slowing down to figure yourself out at any stage of your development or and as an adult is definitely not accepted. Okay? That's being lazy, that's procrastinating, that's being useless, that's being a waster, that's being immature. It's not something that is honored, which is actually such an important part of life, actually. Those pauses, those moments when we slow down and we just let the rest of the world keep on going for a bit while we take time to check in. Okay? Check in with yourself, check in where you're at, check in what you really want to do. Those pauses are essential. I remember my mother, she started giving out to me when I was about 15, maybe earlier than that, but definitely around the age of 15, I do remember, because I didn't have it all figured out. You know, I didn't know what I wanted to be, what I wanted to do, how I used my time. And I was 15, guys. You're not meant to have it all figured out at that age. And yet, she was already going at it, as I should have, okay? Making me feel like faulty, broken, and so on for that. So, I don't know if any of you has experienced anything like that, but yeah, that's what it does. It just makes you feel like you have to do, do, do. Five, a narcissistic mother trains her daughter that setting boundaries is wrong. We know that. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know at this point that narcissism and boundaries really don't get on. It's actually the one thing that it's like garlic and vampires. Okay, so narcissism and boundaries, just it's not a thing. And that so will affect your capacity to make time for the things you love later on in life. If you can't set boundaries, and setting boundaries is an outer work, of course, you set boundaries with people around you, with your mother, but you also set inner boundaries, like you give yourself boundaries, okay, no, from, and we're going to talk about that, how you find the time to do something, how you find the space to do something is about setting also inner boundaries. But if we have just been taught that setting boundaries is wrong, how are we going to find that capacity in ourselves? Okay. 6, a narcissistic mother sets a bar for the child that is always too high to be reached. And it's not very set. So you get to the point that you think you've reached it and the bar is moved. Okay. And again, that stifles the development of confidence. It's like, I mean, how do you set yourself at doing something if you already know that that something is unachievable? That's the pattern that sets into the system when since childhood you've had this bar being set that is always way too high. So you're told that you're going to be a good child if you tidy up your bedroom, but once you've done that, it's not enough. Then you're told that you're going to be a good child if you do this as well, but once you get there, it's never good enough. It's a never-ending game, and that can really deflate motivation. 7, an emotionally unavailable mother, or one that gives a lot of freedom and no guidance, that's also a form of narcissism, okay? It seems a lot less in your face, but it is still a form of narcissism. Is someone that is so self-centered that they are emotionally unavailable for everyone else and for their child. That is a form of narcissism. But that can result in a child that can't know how to emotionally regulate, and later on in life that becomes an obstacle to living a fulfilling life, to do what you want to do. You get overwhelmed by emotions and then you don't know how to deal with them. You haven't been shown, you haven't been taught, your parents were emotionally unavailable, so you don't know how to do that. When you were having strong emotions in your childhood, you were told to just go off and do your own things and whatever, stop being that, and that just can become an obstacle, okay? So, in the light of all this, let's look at procrastination from a different angle, rather than being a fault and being something bad that we should not do. What if procrastination was not a fault or a bad trait of your personality that you were just born with, but a very powerful protective strategy that comes in place when what you would like to do is precious to you, but you don't feel safe? What if your system was trying to spare your inner child the suffering of the criticism and rejection that is perceived as inevitable? What if that part of you that doesn't allow you to go for something you truly love because the pain of feeling you're undeserving is too much? As daughters of narcissistic mothers, we have experienced one or more of the following in our childhood. So we've experienced rejection, criticism, abandonment, conditional love, and public and private shaming. Okay, so under all of the things that we've mentioned above, what happens inside, the different ways we just feel those as punches, are rejection, criticism, abandonment, conditional love, public and private shaming. So all of the above cause hurt and pain that we truly don't want to feel again. I mean, it makes sense to protect from such feelings. Why would you want to go there again? If you knew that doing something causes one of those five things, why the hell would you do it again? I mean, it makes sense. It's way better, it's way wiser to avoid, to distract, to procrastinate, so to speak, not to feel that pain again. You know, if you truly went for something you love, how much would it hurt when you inevitably fail, for example, or when you get criticized and rejected? It would hurt like hell. So, again, I'm not suggesting that all procrastination comes from these mechanisms. There are many aspects to it, of course, and we could do another 10 podcast episodes just on that, on all the different aspects. For example, sometimes procrastination can actually be our inner wisdom, knowing that the timing of what we're trying to do is not right. And you know, there's a whole divine timing thing going on. There's a lot of stuff that can come into place, and that, again, that can be a whole episode on its own. But what we're speaking today, I wanted to speak to this aspect because it is very relevant if you have experienced maternal narcissism. So again, how do we know when this procrastination or that we're doing is actually because the timing is not right and because there is an inner wisdom that is like actually guiding us in a good direction, or because it's like a trigger protective strategy and that actually is holding us back, is keeping us stuck in a pattern repeat that is not helpful, okay, for us. So that's why we're talking about this today. The more you know about this, the more you can become aware, and the more you can begin to feel the subtleties and tell the difference. When I became aware of this mechanism in my own life, I was able to forgive myself for so much, actually, and also stop judging myself so harshly, because I really judge myself a lot for not doing, not being able to implement what I wanted to when I wanted to. It was like meeting a brick wall. The experience for me is like when I wanted to do something that really meant a lot to me, it's like I banged into a wall and I couldn't get over that wall. And that has nothing to do with divine timing. That is just not helpful, and it made me very unhappy. So realizing all of this brought it in a different light. You know, it was not a fault of mine anymore, but a protective strategy that came in place when I needed it, or when I thought I needed it. Because yes, I needed it when I was a child, but I didn't need it anymore as an adult. So can you feel the difference though? How much softer it is to know you have been protecting your precious heart, your precious dreams all along, rather than feeling like you're faulty, broken, immature, useless. Because you're not those things. You're not. You're not. You're not. You're not. Your system's wisdom is simply trying to protect you, keep you safe, which makes sense, as we've seen. Becoming aware of the mechanism is not all the work, of course. It'll still happen, but it is a definite start. With awareness, as you know, come choices. Okay, when you're aware of a mechanism, then you start being empowered to choose how to act, and that is where the difference is. Okay, so what can you actively start doing from now on in light of all of this? Okay, there's 8 steps, there's 8 things. I don't know, are the steps or things that you can do, but there's 8 points, okay, that I want to go through with you. And let's have a look. So, number one, as I mentioned, very, very, very important thing is to slow down. Slow down. It's like a mantra, okay? Take a breath and slow down. I use that with all my clients. Every woman I've worked with within this topic and before, when I was doing more generic work with women, slowing down it's key. We haven't been taught to do that. We have been told the opposite. That is a really bad thing. And you can even think, woman, you're talking about an episode on how to not procrastinate anymore, which is sort of slowing me down, and you're telling me to slow down even more. What the hell? I get it, but yes, slowing down is really key. Whether you're sedating and avoiding by racing around, always busy, or in any other way. So whether you're doing more type A type person that is racing, 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 or type B that is just not doing, not doing, not doing, or a mix of both, slowing down, it's essential because it's you need time to reconnect with yourself. Inner connection is essential to feel into when what you're experiencing is actually useful in the moment, or an old protective strategy in place that you don't need anymore. So slowing down is key. And when you slow down, you also start feeling into what you are doing. Are you avoiding and procrastinating doing that thing because you actually never bloody wanted to do it? And it's because of outer influences that you think you like that and that you want to do that, because that's another thing too, okay? Again, it's a whole new episode only on that, but sometimes that procrastination, that avoidance is there because we don't actually really want to do that thing. It's our mother's wishes, or it's outer influences, or it's the result of judgment, a result of whatever crap that goes on around us, but it's not actually what we want to do. And other times we're procrastinating because we're protecting our heart, because what we would love to do, it's so dear to us. Actually, we want to do it so much that it feels unsafe to even try because we're gonna get crushed. So there's different aspects to it. But if you don't slow down and reconnect with that inner guidance that is in you, you can't tell the difference. You can't actually come to discerning which of all these aspects it is, and there is not only one that's true. They all come and present themselves in different situations in our life. So it's a mix of all of them all the time, constantly. It's quite noisy. But when you slow down, you start simplifying it all. It's actually much, much simpler. But slowing down is key. And this might require some support and guidance, because slowing down doesn't mean just sitting down on the couch, staring at the ceiling, or putting on Netflix. That's distracting, okay? Slowing down means going in. And there's ways to do that. There's techniques, there's practices, and also discomfort is part of the process. And so I strongly, strongly, strongly advise to get support with this, trying to do it on your own, the whole lone wolf kind thing. It's not useful, and it takes a lot longer, and it's way more uncomfortable. And I know because I've done it like that for a long time. And once I got support, that's where things really shifted. So that's why I'm saying that. So that was point number one, slowing down. Number two is to practice being very kind to yourself. Always. I always stress that fact. I always say it. I will always continue to say it. Be kind with yourself. It's key. Key, key throughout this whole process. Being honest, being humble. Sometimes you have to swallow, like, you know, you have to go, okay, that's the truth about me. And it just feels uncomfortable, but I can take it. But all with the undertone of being kind. Kind and loving to yourself, because patterns will repeat. And when you realize that, if you start putting yourself down, that is not helpful. So be kind to yourself. Number three, this process, okay, that you will be going through, that you're going through to start observing the whole procrastination and where it comes from, and when it comes from having had the maternal narcissism in your life, and how it manifests. This process often will involve going through waves of anger, both at yourself for the way you've responded. I know, again, that's why I say be kind to yourself, but it does come. I do get angry at myself. It's like, wow, I'm doing this again. What the hell? It does happen. Waves of it come. And also getting angry at others, like your mother and other family members, maybe that didn't do anything to support you at different times and blah, blah, blah. So anger, it's an aspect of it. And grief also. Grief comes up. Grief, for example, for the time that seems wasted and lost. Okay? That will come up too. And I say seem wasted and lost because no time is ever wasted or lost. It led you to here and now. And there is a bigger wisdom behind it also. That's just, I wanted to say that. But I also know it does feel like that, okay? All the same, it feels wasted and lost, and there is a grief, and it needs to be acknowledged. And those waves are uncomfortable, and as uncomfortable they might be, they are a necessary part of the process. So it's, you can't avoid them. If you're trying to avoid those, then you're going to get stuck at some point along the lines of this process. You're not going to move anywhere because those waves are an essential part. Okay, and again, support, that's what I'm saying, support is important, because when those uncomfortable waves come, we want to stop, we want to backtrack, we want to go back, we want to go, whoa, 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 I didn't sign up for this, this is too much, and it can become overwhelming, and a lot of different things, we can start feeling bad about what we're feeling, and so on. So support and guidance, again, is really, really, really important, ladies. Number four, start taking steps, even if they're baby steps, in the direction of the things you want to do. Okay, so let's assume that the procrastination is about something that you really, really would love to do. Okay, so forget about all the other possibilities of procrastination. That's what this episode is about, is when we want something really, really bad, we want to do it, we know it's good for us, but we just don't seem like doing it, we're meeting that brick wall. So start taking little baby steps, like signing up to that course, for example, you always wanted to do, I don't know, reaching out to that person that can help you through whatever, or start writing that book, even if the house isn't so tidy. That's me. I had to do that. I had to go, okay, whatever, blinkers on. The house is a mess, which is not really even true, but it always looks like it's a mess when I'm sitting down to write a book, and start writing the damn book, which I did. Number five, set inner boundaries with yourself. Okay. There is a whole episode on how to set successful boundaries. You can go look at that. That's more directed outer boundaries, but it also works for the inner boundaries, because the voice we're up against is the same. So set inner boundaries. What is an inner boundary? Like, an example would be from this time to that time, give yourself a time frame, like from 6 till 7 in the evening, or from 10 till 11 in the morning, whatever. I'm doing this thing no matter what. So I'm allocating that time to do this one thing that I know it's important for this dream, for this vision, for this thing that I really want to do. Or if it's for your practice, for example, I also mentioned I avoided yoga or my embodiment practices and stuff like that. So you can also set an inner boundary for those. Like, from this time to that time, this is what I'm doing. And if you get there, okay, and you still feel a heap of resistance, I'm not suggesting that you have to force it and be strong and violent with yourself. But what I'm inviting you not to do is to go distracting. So if you get there in that allocated time, for example, and you don't feel like it, another inner boundary is not to go distracting. So, okay, I'm in this time, set some rules, like I'm not going to go on social media, I'm not going to go and turn on TV instead, I'm not going to go and cook dinner or take care of my kids or do anything. This is time for me. So if I don't feel like, my case, if I don't feel like writing my book, because there's no inspiration, because there's a lot of resistance, because I'm just gonna sit there and breathe. Just be with whatever. So many incredible insights have come to me that way. Like literally sitting, I would sit in front of my notebook because I love writing with hand and with pen and paper still. That's my creative writing process. So I could sit there and just not write one word. But by being there, that's how realization as to why I couldn't do it. The discomfort, the pain, what emotions, tears have come up. Frustration, the whole the waves I had to go through. So by being there and not distracting, if I had gone on and turned on social media, or if I had gone on and started talking to someone else or rang a friend or whatever, I would have distracted from that and I would not have understood so much. So it's really key. And once you do that, you might even start realizing that it's like, you know what? It's actually such a boring thing to sit there and staring at my notebook. I might as well just write something or whatever it is that you need to do, you know? So set some inner boundaries. That is important. Number six, set some outer boundaries. Because you need to claim that time that you need for what you would like to do. You know? You need to own the need that you have with the people around you. I had to do that too. It's like I need time for writing. And if I'm always doing things for the family all the time, that's not going to happen. So it's like, guys, I'm doing all of these things, but I also need an hour every day, and we can talk about it when that suits, where I can be children free, my husband minds them, whatever, and I get the time to do that. So some outer boundaries are important too. Number seven, find a support group. So essential, guys. Like, there's nothing like a place where you can safely start speaking to what you would like to do. You know, a place where you can start speaking about what's precious to you. And it's so challenging. I couldn't even utter the words. I was petrified. I didn't know I was, but I was petrified at the idea of saying anything about what I really wanted to do. Even explore what I really wanted to do. It was so scary. I got put down so much. There was so much shit coming my way anytime I tried to do that when I was a child, that I had just blocked it and locked it so deep, so deep. And it was painful. But to find a place where you can, and even in, you'll see, like, even within a safe container, it still takes, for some people, for some of you, might still take a long time before you can say it, before you can fully speak to it. And it's really important that it's a group where you really feel safe. Use your discernment to find that. But yeah, it's really key. And you will find how many other people are in the same situation too. That also is very helpful. You're not the only one. You know, the everyone finds the time to do what they love bullshit thing. You will realize how much that is a lot of crap and how much the opposite is true. How many people never find the time for what they love. They are avoiding it like the plague. They don't want to do it. It hurts too much to fail. They feel way too undeserving. They feel way too useless. They doubt themselves so much that they don't do what they really want to do. And also from the outside, you start seeing how untrue that is and how wonderful and capable those people are and how they really should do it because they're so amazing at it. And that's true about you as well. It's only that we find it so much easier to see about everyone else. And when it comes to us, we have all the triggers, the trauma, and filters with which we're looking at ourselves. So yeah, find that support group, whether it's a women's circle, women group, whatever could be a group of people that are doing exactly what you want to do, like a writer's group. I don't know, whatever suits you. For me, it was a women's circle because joining a writer's group didn't feel safe enough because a lot of people within that group would have been doing a lot. And I felt like I needed a place where it wasn't about the thing that I wanted to do, but it was about understanding the emotions and why I wasn't doing it and the hurt that was there and people that could get that. I needed people that could get that, make me feel safe in that first, rather than just telling me to write 10 pages a day because that's what you gotta do. That's not what I needed, but that was me. So whatever is right for you. And number 8, this is the last point, but it's really important. So it's not last by importance. Avoid, please, jumping to speak about the things that are precious to you to people you know it's not safe to do so, like your mother, for example, or anyone else who will report to her about this. Okay, so sometimes when we realize these mechanisms, we go from hyperprotective to just the opposite. You know what? I'm just going to talk about this and I'm going to talk about it because this has been myself. So I'm just going to say it to anyone. And that can backfire big time, especially if you go for people that are very unsafe, like your mother. This is the lesson that it took me the longest to learn. I kept going back and telling my mother everything repeatedly, even if I knew what was coming, even when I realized about a little bit about maternal narcissism, I still kept going. And that set me back months every single time. I remember at some point finding finally some kind of resolution in the fact that I really wanted to write this book, and that this book had been there for like literally years, and I really wanted to. And in a conversation, I was already aware that it wasn't really helpful for me to speak things like that with my mother, but I still, she managed to get it out of me because they have their own way to ask the right questions and make you crumble. So I did, and I said the name of my protagonist, and she just said, Oh, that's the same name as whatever other book and whatever other series, which seems like such a simple comment, right? That just destroyed me. It took me another year and a half before I actually sat down and wrote that book. And I kept that name because I really like it. But that's how simple it can be to be triggered, okay? Your mother will more than likely behave the way she always does, okay? And there's a high chance that her response will trigger those protective strategies, those very protective strategies that you are trying to overcome, that you're trying to move beyond. So maybe there might come a time when you can do that, when you can go and talk to her about these things. I don't know. That's not my case for now. I still don't. But we're all different and we all have different experiences. So I don't want to speak for everyone, of course. But really, the suggestion is not to do that because it's just not helpful, really. And I know that we're constantly seeking connection with our mother because that's what we do in one way or another. But once you realize how unhelpful that is, it can really support you in going forward with what you want to do. You know, I don't mention my books to anyone. Actually, this might be the first time I even spoke about it on this platform. I don't put it on social media. I don't put it anywhere. It's a thing for me. And for now, that's what it is. It's a thing for me. It's my own creative process. It's my own way to express myself. It's my own world. And it doesn't have to be shared with anyone. if I don't feel that safe. It doesn't make it a more real thing just because you go saying it around, if that is triggering you. If it's not, go on and do that. But it's important. And especially when it goes down to talk to your mother. Your mother is the person, if you've had a narcissistic mother, your mother is the person that hasn't really supported you up until now. So she's not going to start now, all of a sudden. And it can be really harmful for you to go and seek constantly her approval and her connection by telling things that are precious to you. Okay, so that's it. So, little recap. What can we do at this point when we start understanding that procrastination is a protective strategy when we are about to do something that is really, really important to us, that we really love, but we feel unsafe to start and do? So slow down, number one. Practice being very kind to yourself, number two. Get support into navigating waves of grief and anger that will come up, number three. Then number four is start taking baby steps in the direction of what you want to achieve. Number five, set inner boundaries with yourself, like set an allocated time, for example. Number six, set some outer boundaries with the people around you. Number seven, find a support group where you can speak freely about this thing that you want, this dream, what you want to achieve. And number eight, avoid jumping and go tell your mother and people involved with your mother about your dream. Keep it safe. Keep it safe. Okay, so that's it for today. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear reflections and experiences, if how that feels for you, what is your experience in all of this. And if you have more questions, it is quite the topic. There's a lot of aspects to it, so questions can come up. And yeah, you can always reach out, contact me, send me an email, ask whatever. And if I can, and I'll do my best to support and answer if I can. And also remember, the women's circles are open. You can sign up, you can apply on the website. I leave the link in the description. That is a support group, guys. That is a place where you can really feel safe and speak and explore. It's not just about talking about maternal narcissism. It's about you. It's about the journey you're on and what's important to you, what's life for you in the moment, and how to navigate all these different waves that come up. So that is a safe space to speak to all of this. And it is one of the reasons I created it, to be a safe space. It's really, really, really important. So yeah, if you're interested, you can check the link below. And with that, I'm going to leave you with lots of love. Bye for now.